This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled Good Knights, K-N-I-G-H-T-S, for California football. And our authors, who are joining me from Florida, although they make their home elsewhere, Isaac Bowers and Carol Welty Roper. Welcome, Carol and Isaac, to the program.
Hi, Jay. Good to hear from you.
Good to visit with you as well. This book is a first attempt at a fictional novel between Carol and grandson Isaac. Am I understanding that correctly?
It is. This is Isaac's first book.
All right. And Isaac, you are a young guy, or were a young guy, or still consider yourself a young guy, not a seasoned author. Where did this story come from?
This story came from, I had a report to do in class. We were writing about what we love the most, and I wrote about football, so my grandma was in town. So I came home one day, and I wanted to put more into it, so I asked her if I could make it a book.
And Isaac, you are from California. Is that the right location for you?
Yes.
And Carol, you're from Alaska.
That's correct. To visit Isaac, and after school, he would come in and tell me a story. I'd write it down. Then the next day, read it back to him, and we just collaborated on it that way.
Were there other contributors to the storyline?
No, it was just he and I, but I've worked with his brother in writing a book, and also one of their neighbors, we wrote a book. So there's been three stories that have come out of this group of kids.
Fabulous. Carol, did you always have a desire to be an author and share stories that would appeal to young adults and the tweens?
Well, I started writing little stories when I was in grade school. And so I kind of put it on the back burner of my mind, you know. But when my grandsons started telling me their stories, it really it got the creative juices flowing again.
Excellent. There must have been something in real life that contributed to this. Isaac, was this based on true incidences, sports experience, or how did this story come together?
Well, the storyline was based off of my football team because I played football for 7 years so far.
Now, are they called the Good Knights, or is that a story or a name that you made up for the story?
That's a name we made up. My football team's called the Knights.
They are called the Knights. And so you added good to them to give them a little better reputation, perhaps?
Yeah.
Carol, what do you know about the Good Knights?
Well, the thing that I contributed was I've been raising five children and taking them to sporting events after school and so forth. So I had some of the emotion and some of the attitudes that led to what team building is all about for the community. That was kind of my contribution to his actual storyline.
What is the underlying message that came through once you completed it?
Isaac, you can answer that one about never.
It's to never give up.
Is it because the Good Knights in your story were not exactly a successful team?
They were a successful team. They just never gave up whenever they played another team or they tried it their hardest.
The other part of that was they had to do some problem solving within the story. The football story is a kind of a backdrop of the teamwork that also went on off the playing field. So it was not just the football game. It was making sure that the community got involved so each of these problems that came up with each character got solved in a teamwork kind of approach.
Which of the problems that you have described in your book is going to be the one that stands out or maybe the highlight story that you have created?
The big story was one of the boys' father dies, and they end up having the mother ends up losing the house and the business because of the medical cost of medical expenses. So therefore, Leon, one of the little characters, one of the five characters, can't play after school sports because he has to be home to cook supper because his mother works two jobs. Well, the big problem was Leon's a really good football player, and the team goes to help with the help of their parents to get the mother a better-paying job so that Leon then is freed up so he can fulfill his dream to play sports.
That's an interesting sideline to football. Isaac, that's a great side story. Did you personally know anyone that had experienced something similar to what you've outlined in your book?
One of my fellow football players this year on another team, his dad had cancer, and he was only expected to live one more week, so they filmed the game when we played against him to show to his dad.
Fascinating. Isaac, did you have some fun being an author and telling this story? How long did it take?
The story took like about a half a year to explain, and it was finished after a year.
Did you enjoy it enough that you want to do a sequel or a follow-up to The Good Knights?
I enjoyed it a lot, and I would like to do a sequel to it, too.
I would ask you what your grade was on this particular submission, but I'll just avoid that just in case it didn't come out well. Carol, how involved were you in the actual writing process? Was it an intense bit of work for you? Did you write long distance? How did you come up with the storyline and get it completed?
Well, I pretty much got the skeleton of the story down while I was in Bakersfield so that I made sure that the story stayed true to Isaac's story. But then I took it back with me and embellished it, but I wanted to make sure that he had the real editing part to it so that it wouldn't be my story, it would be his story. So what I ended up doing is writing it, having it edited, having it proofread, getting it to the publisher, all of that, which is quite takes a long time.
It does take a long time. Yes, 70 pages, that's an excellent first effort. Your target audience, I'm assuming, is young adults.
Actually, it's probably middle school to the higher high school. It's what they call a tween book.
A tween book.
It's not a little kid's book, but it's not a young adult either. It's more for, teenagers, yeah.
Carol, what's the feedback? What is the story from those who have read your novel?
Well, actually, we received a award on it. We got from the U.S. Book Review, we got the Gold Seal of Literary Excellence. So we were just really pleased about that.
Congratulations. That's a great achievement by any standard.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Is there anything that's controversial about your book? I know it covers some basic human interest stories, but is there anything in the storyline from your perspective that people might consider controversial or different?
Yes, there is some controversy, and probably if I had to say the biggest controversy in children's literature and things promoted for the media for children's viewing is that in today's media, many times the children are the wise ones, and the adults are sort of fumbling about.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as wise. They're not seen as credible. Whereas in this story, all the ages come together to solve the problems. The kids actually go to the parents. The parents see problems that they can help with. So it's a real teamwork mentality. For not just the team players, the kids, but also for their families.
Perhaps that's one of the secrets behind your award.
Maybe. But that's the way, that's actually the way his parents live. They are very involved with after school sports. They're very involved with their children's education. So that's something that is being an example being set by his parents.
Isaac, introduce this book to my listeners in a couple of paragraphs or a couple of sentences. How would you get them interested in getting their very own personal copy of Good Knights for California Football?
It's on Amazon.com, and it's about teamwork on and off the field where children and adults work together to solve problems in real-life situations.
That's important. Now, Carol, you also, you've been a book illustrator, I understand, and have done a lot in the creative field in addition to sharing this book with your grandson.
That's correct. I took a class out of Minnesota, which was what Carl Schultz did with Peanuts.
Yes.
You know, the illustrator. So I have completed that and have the credential as a book illustrator. Illustrated Cat Coon, which is Logan Bauer's first book. I illustrated Rebecca's Revenge, which is Essie Cargill's book that I helped co-author. And then the cover for Good Nights for California Football was the idea, and Jennifer Bowers, Isaac's mother, actually did the photograph.
Incredible.
For the cover. So we've all gotten our little creative finger into this project.
Do you think there'll be a follow-up to this one, either from your side or from Isaac's?
We're talking about that. And so we're going to see how this book goes, and then we'll put our heads together and see how these characters evolve.
Now, part of the motivating message that the coach gives is, number one, focus. Number two, pay attention to details. Three, play from your heart. Give it all, 100%, and never give up. Good words to pass along. Where do we get copies of Good Nights for California Football?
You can request it at any of the bookstores like Barnes & Noble. It's also on Amazon.com. There is Barnes & Noble online. You can get it through Trayford Publishing. So it's also going to be available in some of the libraries. It's with the Publisher Weekly. So people are buying it through the distributors of Baker & Taylor and Ingram Book Distributors. So it should be out there. All you need to do is request it if you don't find it in the bookstore. And the cost is $12. And it's $3 for iBooks.
Any possibility you'll be maybe launching a website or a Facebook fan page?
There is a website. It's called timelessinktales.com, and that's my personal webpage. And if somebody requests it, I will be happy to mail them a copy.
Exceptional. Thank you for sharing the story. Isaac, that is a great start for a career. Here, I'm going to correct all that stuff. Isaac, thank you for joining me today, and Carol, thank you as well. I am excited for you and look forward to the next project when it comes out.
Thanks, Jay. This has been fun.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi everybody, this is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station. Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Hello, everyone. I'm Clint Yates. So glad you could join us today on the Cross Books Line. Today, we're going to talk about a very interesting book I think a lot of folks are going to be interested in. The name of the book is The Angels Are in Wyoming, with a subtitle, The Soothers. And the author of that book, David Redding, joins us today on the Cross Books Line from his home in Columbia, South Carolina. David, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks. for having me.
Well, first, David, before we start talking a little bit about your book, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Originally, I'm in Kentucky, and my home is Georgetown. It's 70 miles east of Louisville, just to get people located. And there was a small college there, Georgetown College. My late preacher father taught the Bible there for 30 years. And I graduated from there in 1970. But, well, I'll just have to be blunt. I was a rebellious minister's son.
Oh, no.
But, although I did become a Christian when I was 20. My father was on the missionary field for 1 year in Nigeria from 1967 to 1968. I became a teacher after I graduated from college in 1970. But, I'll cut through a lot and tell you that when I was a young man of 34, I decided to enter the ministry. I truthfully felt a call about it. And so I did share it with my father, who advised me accordingly. And in 1987, I came to South Carolina. I pastored a small church not far from Myrtle Beach, as a matter of fact, about 35 miles away. So I was there for a year. And then, more recently, I pastored a small church about 40 miles from Columbia. And I do a lot of preaching now with the Department of Mental Health. But again, before all of that, I was a school teacher. I taught French for a few years. And then it was later that I felt my call to the ministry.
Boy, that's quite a story, David. So let's talk a little bit. I know this is your book, The Angels Are in Wyoming, is a faith-based book set in what era? I know it's in the West. What era are we talking about? Give us a little setup about where the book starts and kind of what we're talking about.
Well, it's in 1890s Wyoming. The setting is Grigsby, but you won't find it on the map. It's a fictitious name. Yeah. It's a town about 30 miles east of Cheyenne. You're talking about a faith-based book. It's about a community where the main character of the book, the outlaw, meets a lot of Christian people, and he's greatly affected by him. And it helps him quite a bit in his life.
Well, David, does the Western culture run deep in your family? Or why, if not, why did you decide to choose to write one of your first books about a story from the Old West?
Well, that's just it. I've been asked that before. But when I was growing up in the 50s, I grew up with such Western heroes as Roy Rogers and Bill Elliott and Gene Autry, just to mention a few. And I was always intrigued with the Old West, and I guess you might say it's been a hobby of mine, a main interest. I like it very much. And so one day, I just decided to combine two of my favorite interests, the Old West and Christianity. And thus, this is how I came up with that title. Let me get ahead of myself, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And say that angels in the Old Testament and New Testament refers to messengers.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of this Christian community become angels and soothers to this outlaw Jack Sampson.
So in your research, when we all think about the Wild West, I mean, we really think about the Wild West, I guess. So how does, you don't always think of it being a Christian kind of atmosphere, but what was it like that in the Old West?
Well, it just depends on where you were. There were some small Christian communities. It's like a little house on the prairie. That was a Christian community there. Wasn't that far west, so there were some. And you connect it with gamblers and outlaws, and the main character, Jack Sampson, is one of those. And so, yes, there were some Christian communities in the old Wild West then.
I guess if I remember, you know, I guess a lot of it goes by the movies maybe I've seen, David, or some of the books that I've read. But it did seem like in these small Western communities back in that time period, there was always a church in the community, or they would build a little small town and they would build a church. Is that right?
That's it. That's what I was trying to say, yes.
So you've taken, I mean, is this a shoot 'em up? I mean, how? Give us just kind of a basic storyline of how this outlaw comes in contact. You know, we don't want to be a spoiler with the book, but give us a little teaser on how they become intertwined in one another in your book.
I'm glad you asked that. You're talking about violence. But first of all, Jack Sampson is a mean outlaw on the run, and in the start of the book, when he comes to the town of Grigsby, he has robbed a bank in Cheyenne. A posse and the sheriff and a posse have come after him, pursued the gang, and they, seven of them, went in different directions. And so he rides in to the town probably not even 24 hours after he's been involved in that bank robbery. And I wanted to be sure I'd do this. I kept the violence at a minimum. There are only about really three quote-unquote hard, violent parts in that book. Mm-hmm. I tried to subdue that. That's, I have enough to...
Yeah, that's kind of got to be some hard work to try and write a story, at least what we put in our minds these days when you think about the Wild West. Of leaving the violence out.
And which is what, as I said, I tried to keep that at a minimum. But the reality of it, he is a mean, hard outlaw. And he's been involved in a lifestyle like that. Terribly confused. And so, as were a lot of people then, I dare say.
So did you keep the violence out, David? I know in some of the material I read about your book, you're kind of hoping, I guess it's targeted really towards men, but you're hoping maybe some teenagers might pick this up and read it.
I wish they would. That's another thing. I tried to be eclectic when it comes to age groups. I'm not sure whether young kids 12 and under would quite understand it all, but teenagers enough, yes. I tried to make it pleasing for them. Right. So it is focused on just basically teenagers and up. That's my target audience as far as age is concerned.
Are there a lot of Western books out there that you've seen, David, that really focus in on kind of a Christ-centered community and how that affected a person? I'm kind of guessing. I haven't heard a lot of, about those. Are there many out there like that, like your book?
Well, I've read a few now Western novels. Out there, many like that, I have to confess, I can't really be sure that that's the case, but again, they had story like that. They just said Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rifleman, ages back, was somewhat like that. They had sort of a Christian community. In fact, I noticed that some of the main characters had biblical names, but I admit there aren't too many like that, to answer your original question, but I don't think it's unrealistic either.
Now, this was your first book, right, David? What was difficult about getting in there and putting this thing to paper, especially about something, an era so far back?
Well, I had to, you said earlier, had to keep the time period straight. I wanted no anachronism in that. And the hardest part, I guess, was wanting to keep the violence at a minimum. And of course, I didn't want to repeat myself through the book, which I almost did, because he shares a lot with a lot about himself with a lot of people. And so, keeping that and not making it too long and boring, I guess maybe they were the most difficult parts of the book as far as the story itself is concerned. That would be it, basically.
Yeah. Again, the name of the book we're talking about today from Cross Books is The Angels Are in Wyoming, The Soothers. David Redding is the author, and he's with us today on the Cross Books line. David, are you thinking about anything else in the future? Anything plans for a sequel or another Western-based novel? Or are you looking at other things, perhaps, to write in the future?
A timely question, that is, because I have been working on a sequel to this same book. So, yes, I've been doing that more recently.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, tell us a little bit about where we might be able to find the book. Do you have a website or a blog or something where we could learn more about you? And where can we find The Angels Are in Wyoming?
Okay. You can look it up on www.crossbooks.com. And another source, another internet, www.barnesandnoble.com, and then www.amazonbooks.com. And a brief synopsis on all of those about the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a small biographical sketch about me.
Okay.
So those are the main ones that would be selling it right now on the internet.
Okay. Well, we're looking forward to learning more about the book, The Angels Are in Wyoming, The Soothers. I hope folks have a chance to get to some of those websites, read a little more, and pick up a copy soon. And I can't wait. So when do you think you're going to sit down and start working on the sequel? Are you already in the middle of writing this thing?
I'm in the middle of writing it. That's mm-hmm. it, exactly.
All right. When do you think you got a target date?
Well, I think maybe it would be maybe at most 2 years from now, but hopefully more like one. And so I guess that would be, now I haven't put a month and a date on the target date,
yeah.
But it would be about anywhere between a year and 2 years from now.
All right, that sounds terrific. Well, again, the name of the book that we've been talking about today that really takes this unique picture of putting an outlaw in the Wild West in a Christian community and the impact that it has on his life. The name of the book is The Angels Are in Wyoming, with a subtitle, The Soothers. The author is David Redding from Columbia, South Carolina, who's been with us on the Cross Books line today. David, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck with this book, and good luck with your sequel.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate all that.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Recalculating the GPS for the Soul, authored by Andrea Stach, co-authored by her daughter, Samantha Chattel. Andrea, thank you for joining me today from the west coast of Canada.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Absolute pleasure to be here.
I have detected more than a Canadian accent. Share with my audience a little more of your background story and why this book was put to print.
Okay. Well, I do come from England. I was born in London. I was brought up in South Africa. That's probably why the accent is not Canadian. And I'm currently married to a Canadian and enjoy living here on Vancouver Island. And yes, my daughter and I co-authored this little bookie called Recalculating the GPS for the Soul, because it shows, it's sort of an intimate mother-daughter journey of our self-discovery and healing through what I do, which is called numerotherapy, which is really fusing numerology, which is what I have been, a master numerologist for many, many years, with metaphysics, because I am also a metaphysician, and I kind of joined the dotted lines together as I was going through all this numerology that I've been dealing with over the years. I started seeing, you know, signposts and red flags all over the place, and I thought, okay, we have something deeper here, let's go and have a look at it. So really, this was the intimate mother-daughter journey of my very slow and sometimes rather hilarious awakening, because my daughter was at the time a great, giving me a kick to get me up and running, and it took a long time. And anyway, here I am today. I'm a metaphysician, and so is she. And this book, Recalculating the GPS with the Soul, is really meant to give people the tools to be able to help themselves, because so many people over the years keep saying to me when they come to me, I know I should be doing something, but I don't know what. And usually they always come and find somebody like me when their lives are falling to pieces. So the numerology fused into numerotherapy, because not only can I use the numerological part to take out a life map for somebody, but because I am a clairsentient, I'm not a clairvoyant, I'm clairsentient, I can read a person's field and I can do the energy work to help them to unblock themselves. So this is really how it all started.
In addition to that, you are somewhat of a world traveler and experienced several cultures, including the Seychelles and Brazil and Namibia. Share a little of that story, how you became a citizen of the world.
Yeah, well, when I first got married to my late husband, should we say, we went off to live in the Seychelles Islands, which is halfway between Africa and India. We lived there for a couple of years, had a bit of a failed experiment in tourism, and he said to me, you know what, I'm a farmer by profession, so let's go back farming. So we went back to South Africa, where my children were born, Samantha first, and then I have a son, Simon, who was born 2.5 years later. And then with the situation in South Africa being, you know, as it was in those days, my late husband didn't want the children to be brought up in that sort of apartheid-era place. So off we went, and we lived in Brazil for 14 years. But when I mean Brazil, I mean the bush in Brazil.
The bush in Brazil.
150 kilometers away from the nearest big town, and we had to fly, they had to fly me in every month to go and do my shopping because the roads were just too bad.
Incredible.
So that was the very beginning there in Brazil. And then, of course, it got better and better over the years. And then he went back to Namibia, which is where his family had come from, for a family meeting. And he phoned me up and he said, look, Namibia has just become independent. The government have offered me a wonderful job running a research station. Pack up and come to Namibia. So off we went to Namibia. And I was there for 10 years. And 5 years into our being there, he dies. So I stayed there another 5 years. And at that time, we were all becoming very much more sort of holistic. Now, Samantha had been holistic from the start. She was born knowing. And this little five-year-old in Brazil looked up at me one day and she said, Mommy, do you love yourself? And I looked at her and I said, where did you come from? What are you talking about? So she was the one who pulled me, pushed me, cajoled, begged me, and eventually got me onto this holistic life. And she's been on it all along. And she's a very accomplished healer in her own right and a metaphysician. And she is currently anchoring a huge pyramid of light and love, which we all work on. It's connected to various different countries, including the ones I've just mentioned to you. Every Sunday we all get together in our various different time zones. And we just pump out the love and the light to anybody who needs it. all over the world.
Share with my listeners a little more of what it means to be a practicer of holistic lifestyle. And what is the best descriptive between the term naturalist and holistic?
Okay, well, holistic means looking at something from the mind, the body, and the soul aspect, whereas a naturalist would be just, you know, looking at things in its natural form, organic food and all that kind of stuff. So to be a holistic person, which is what I am today, and my daughter was born looking at all of these aspects, together we thought, you know, we've got such a lot of combined knowledge between the two of us, and it would be a good idea to put it all down. Now, as a matter of fact, I had started writing a little book about my travels to all these exotic places, and I thought it would be a good idea to have it as a reference book for my grandchildren and their children to come. And then I got a bit bored with all of that, and I stopped that one, and I started writing about another book about numerotherapy, of how I had realized that when people come to me and they say, for example, I find a problem with the number three, which is all about how it's difficult for a person to be able to express themselves emotionally in an honest way because they fear being laughed at or rejected or humiliated. And I noticed over the years, I'm just taking three as an example, that everybody that had that issue would inevitably have physical problems, but always in the same place. And this is where I say I started connecting the dots between the correlation of the number telling you the lesson, and if you're not listening to the lesson, well, the only way it can catch your attention is to tweak you by giving you a physical problem. So that is where numerotherapy came from. I do a life map for somebody. I see exactly what's going on. I see their talents, which come from their name. I see their issues, which I call life lessons, which comes from their birth date. Then I make all my calculations. And on one A4 piece of paper, I land up with a person's whole life plan, if you like. And for the people that are ailing, not knowing what they're doing, how can I do this? What am I supposed to be doing? Why am I sick? You know, there are answers. If you know where to look, they're all there. So that is really numerotherapy. Once I've seen where the issues are, I tell the people, you have problems with feeling, you know, you're afraid of being rejected or humiliated. If somebody laughs at you when you say something and they say, yes, absolutely. So we have on the energy field things called chakras. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Jay.
Yes.
But if a chakra is not working properly, usually it will get blocked. And if it gets blocked, it's not irrigating the physical organs that lie underneath it, so to speak. So that's why there is a correlation between the body being out of whack or discomfort or dis-ease, that's where the word disease comes from. So what we do is we isolate where the block is. We can undo the block and help the person empower themselves and get on with their life plan and do their lessons. By doing their lessons, they begin to understand that they can take control of what's happening in their lives, and they don't need to, you know, have everybody else's leftovers, so they can turn what were their stumbling blocks, actually, into beautiful building blocks. So that is basically what numerotherapy is. Okay. And it's all thanks to Samantha for kicking me into awareness, because I had, amongst my my experiences, I had an NDE, which is what we call a near-death experience, and that was really something quite stunning, which, you know, made me really think. But it took 10 years for that penny to drop. Anyway, and slow learner, but I am.
How long did it take you and Samantha to complete this particular book, 134 pages of material?
It was about a year ago now. She called me up here. We had a little Skype, and she said, you know, Mom, I had a meditation yesterday. And in that meditation, I kind of got tweaked on the ear by the universe and said, it's time for you girls to get that information out to the world. You've got to get going. So she said, how about come down here with your two half manuscripts, and I've got a half a manuscript here of what I was writing, and let's just redo everything, and let's put it all together in one book. And that's how recalculating the GPS for the soul came about, because if you don't know where you're going, you can't get there.
Is it a fairly simple book for someone who has no clue how to begin understanding numerology?
Oh, yes. Now, I'm not aiming to make numerologists out of everybody. So what we did was I used my life as the example, because people can resonate with a person like me who was fast asleep and very materialistic and totally five-sensory.
Mm-hmm.
They can resonate how I changed over my life by living in different countries and cultures and coming across different situations, and with my daughter, you know, being the chief kicker in the background, keeping me on the short and narrow there, they can resonate with me saying, oh, I can resonate with that. Oh, yes, yes, I've had one of these experiences. So what we did was use my life journey, if you like, as the example. I really kind of put myself right out there on a limb, if you like, for people to examine. But it does help by showing people that everyday people can also take control of their lives if they know where to look and ask the right questions.
Spend a couple of sentences or paragraphs and introduce this book to my listeners as though they've never met or heard anything that we've discussed to this moment. Get them interested in buying a copy of Recalculating the GPS for the Soul.
Okie dokie. I would say that Recalculating GPS for the Soul takes you on an intimate mother-daughter journey of self-discovery and healing through numerotherapy and the metaphysics, where it was my daughter Samantha who was my teacher in this life. And I was really the very unwilling student until I began to grasp what she was actually going on about. So it chronicles my very slow and sometimes hilarious awakening and gradual transformation from being that stubborn five-sensory person who only valued material things to becoming a multi-sensory person who now uses the science of numbers and metaphysics to empower other people through what we call numerotherapy. So I think that kind of tells it all. What we did was we set the book in two parts. The first part is really rather a travelogue of all the different places I lived in and how very gradually pennies started dropping. And then the second part is the part where I use myself as the example with my name, my numbers, and how people can work out exactly what their talent from the name numbers are, where their private, their life lessons come from their date of birth. It's all there. They can work it out. And then I have written in what each number means and how it relates to those things so they can easily see the problems that they're facing and the talents that they have. And hopefully this little bookie will serve as an aha moment for a lot of people who say, oh, my goodness me, now I understand this. And then we'll just be catalysts for change for them so they can go on and empower themselves.
Andrea Stahl, thank you for joining me today. The title of the book, again, is Recalculating the GPS for the Soul. This has been a book that has just been released, 134 pages, and she's co-written it with her daughter, Samantha Chattel. Andrea, where do my listeners get a copy of your book?
Well, it is available online. I've noticed that there are a gazillion places that are selling it. If you put in recalculating ... the GPS for the soul, up come a million places. There's Balboa Press. You can order it from there. It's on Amazon.com. It has its own website, the book, which is www, and then just condense everything, recalculatingthegpsforthesoul.com. On its own website, there are links to where you can go to order the book, and the book comes out in e-copy for those people who have Kindles and Nook books and things. It comes out as a soft cover and a hard cover.
Very good. Listeners, I'll give you the correct spelling of Andrea's last name, S-T-A-U-C-H, a German name by origin, pronounced Stahl. Uh-huh. Thank you so much for joining me today, Andrea, and sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I just hope we can give people another perspective on the numerology part, you know, just to show people that it's a very useful and empowering tool. It's not just used for party tricks. So we'd like to change the concept of that a bit, too.
Very good. Enjoyed visiting with you. For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.